Welcome to the Live Transform podcast. Dr. Jim Richards, Audrey, and myself. Mm-hmm. Thanks for joining us. And what I enjoy about the podcast, Audrey, you made a comment, or a person wrote in. Okay. Yeah. So we send out a weekly email, you know, with regards to kind of an update of what we do.
Right.
And so we have the Live Transform, but we have All About Relationships podcast, mm-hmm. that's weekly, and then that we do. And then this one with Jim, the Live Transform podcast that we do.
Every week.
But someone wrote in.
Oh, yeah. I just got it yesterday. They just started a new format. So they said, hey, you know, we've always listened to All About Relationships. We had no idea that you did another weekly podcast, and now we're 211 episodes behind. Like, and they don't even know that these episodes can go up to an hour. I mean, you can live with, and another person I was coaching, counseling with their marriage, she's just going through a season in her life of loneliness because she's separated from her husband, and now they're working towards reconciliation, and it's been a beautiful process. But she has told me, she said, I just wake up and I put on Jim, Bob, and Audrey, and I have hours. She just started. So she says, I can just have hours of just being friends. And I hope that you feel that way. I hope that you feel like we're being friends together. We're on this journey together and we're enjoying it. Last week's podcast, I had so much fun just having fun. Because, you know, fun is one of my favorites.
There it is.
And Jim, I could not appreciate your friendship more. I do not have words to tell you how much I appreciate. There's just not enough English words to tell you.
Well, the three of us have enjoyed a very long. And the thing is, not only has it been a fun and enjoyable relationship the three of us have, but it's been a productive relationship.
Yes, yes. The subject of transformation.
Millions of people.
Yeah. The subject of transformation being easy, I think that's kind of a theme we're following right now. Wait a minute. Or simple. Transformation is simple. Just apply it to everything that seems to be, you know, keeping you stuck. And it's true. Transformation has become effortless as we have applied these principles that we're talking to. Yep. Talking about, we don't talk about them just for the sake of talking about them. We've applied these to our lives, and that's why we're so passionate about sharing them.
The other thought is, you know, the seasons of life change, and we change. And then it's just like, oh, so what do I do in this season? You know, what do I do now? And it's just like, apply what you've already, you know, been instructed and experienced. It'll work in this season as well.
Yeah. You know, I'm thankful for the information, you know, that we share, but I'm always kind of like, kind of holding my breath, wondering, are you even going to try to put this into practice? Or are you going to deceive yourself and think that knowing the information makes any difference at all in your life? Because it doesn't. Mm-mm. Knowing everything that if you could quote everything that we have said for all the years we've been having a broadcast, which is a lot of years, wouldn't make any difference.
No.
You might just kind of, your ego will get bumped up and you just think you're smarter than somebody else, or, you know, you might be able to win more arguments, but your life wouldn't get any better.
You have to make it yours. Several weeks back, you said that we have this illusion that if we knew the future, that we would be prepared for it. Yeah. And it's an illusion. And it's the same thing with this. We have an illusion that because we have this information, we're living the transformation.
Yeah.
But the indicators of living transformation are pretty simple. Are you living with peace in your heart? Are you having mercy on others? Do you seem to have, you know, buttons and triggers? You just don't seem to have them. I mean, for me, that's been my indicator, is that, wow, I just don't react like I used to.
I'm not as scared
as I used to be.
And I'll bring this up because this is most relevant and recent for us.
Yeah.
You came, you know, from a trip and you were exhausted, you know, just worn out. Mm-hmm. And then you come in late, you know, after midnight. Then you wake up Monday morning and you're hitting the ground running.
And it had been 10 days before that I had not had rest.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that's the recipe, you know, for for a challenging day.
Yeah.
And I mean, she came home and she wasn't doing well. Now, I'm bringing this up.
Because he's telling on me.
I'm telling on you. But I'm bringing this up because you all hear about Audrey taking her walks in the desert with Winston,
right,
and how glorious and how, you know, there's rainbows and butterflies and flowers.
Everywhere I go.
And
mm-hmm.
Everything beautiful. She came home and she was a little challenged.
I was okay. Very challenged. I had a low functioning day.
Right.
Well, down in the South, we'd call it cranky.
Yeah, exactly. I was cranky.
Yep. And so Robert and I were experiencing mom in this way. But here's what I'm bringing up.
Did she come in and y'all just start singing Kumbaya?
No.
Oh,
no,
okay.
No,
just checking.
And I didn't try to correct her. You know, I didn't try to bring logic or reasoning to it. That wouldn't help. But this is what, you know, since then we've talked about, and this is about where transformation is real. And that is, she's consistently and authentically herself, mm-hmm, even on a hard day.
Yep.
Yeah, I remained calm. And I think in this tone, I said, you know what, Robert and Bob, the planes got switched last night. I didn't get home. It was already a big weekend after a big week. And it's Monday morning and I got to start full on with a big day of appointments. And so this isn't how I would have wanted my day to go. And in this tone of voice, I said, if you feel a mood or an atmosphere around me, I'm low functioning today and it's not about you. So please don't take anything personally. Mm-hmm. I'm just low functioning today.
You know what? That is one of the most important phrases people can ever give to the people around them. You know, when I had a big, you know, ministry staff around me, you know, we had 21 full-time people on staff, and I don't even know how many part-timers we had, how many volunteers we had. So, you know, I'm just surrounded by people. And you know how it is, when you're in that kind of situation, every emotion that you have is right out in front of everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have this luxury of going to work and going sitting into a cubicle and being able to be in a bad mood by yourself.
Exactly, exactly.
And so, you know, one of the things I started doing way on back there because you know, you'd come in and you'd have a bad day. And obviously people recognize you're not yourself.
I'm not myself. I'm not as warm.
Yeah. Now you may not have said anything mean. You might, you haven't been rude. You haven't done anything other than just maybe you're quieter that day than usual.
Yes.
But then everybody around you passes a judgment.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Remember, judgment is when you assume to know why somebody's doing something. Mm-hmm. And usually you make your judgments about you.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, that person's doing this. It's got something to do with me. They don't like me. They're mad at me today. I've done something wrong. And so then that person passing those judgments, then that day shifts for them. And now they are adding to your stress.
Yeah.
They're adding to your level of conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And they are creating scenarios that could go really bad for them and for you. And so, you know, people think, and I used to drive my family crazy with this, you know, I'll tell you, you know what, I'm not in a great mood today. And that's all I'm going to tell you about it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell you why I'm not in a great mood. I'm not going to tell you what went wrong.
No,
I'm not going to tell you if I feel bad. I'm not
going
to tell you if I feel good. It's like, I ain't talking about that. Just all I need you to know is I'm not feeling very well.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't, explanations, whether you mean for them to or not, explanations tend to spiral into excuses and justifications.
Right, right.
And then also, then you're reliving something. And I forget the terminology for this. You know, what is the type of counseling, you know, that, Freud and those people would do where they go back and revisit and talk about their past and all that kind of stuff? I cannot remember the word right now. So everybody be patient with me.
Okay.
Ever since I've had COVID, I just lose words. I know in my head I can see it. But anyhow, that type of counseling, studies show that the majority of people who do that, who go back and talk about their problems, that the majority of those people get worse. It doesn't matter if it's Christian counseling. It doesn't matter if it's a psychologist or a sociologist or whatever, you know, out there doing it. When you go back and start reliving your past, then you relive your past, which means you're meditating on it, which means you start to experience it again. And so you get worse. So people don't know how to communicate these kinds of things. They think they've got to tell you the whole story, or they want you to tell them the whole story, or whatever.
Right.
But, you know, the thing I started saying to my staff, and I started this 30 years ago, is, actually, when I hire people, part of our orientation, when I hire people, there's a segment in there where we talk about this, and I say, you know, if I'm going through a difficult day, I will tell you, yes, I'm in a bad mood. Yes, I feel bad. Yes, I'm angry, but it's not about you.
Mm-hmm.
I used to do that in counseling all the time. Somebody come in after I've had to deal with something horrible. And you know how it is in the ministry. You're dealing with people committing suicide. Yes. You're dealing with all this kind of stuff.
Right.
And, you know, then all of a sudden, bam, it's time for your next appointment.
Yes.
And so I would start, I can't tell you how many times I would start a session and just say, all right, obviously you're going to be able to tell I'm tense. Mm-hmm. And something's bothering me, mm-hmm. but it's not about you.
Right.
Now, even then, most people aren't going to believe you. They're mm-hmm. still going to make it about them.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
But if people could just learn to inform the people around mm-hmm. them, it's like, I know I'm kind of not myself today, yeah. but it's not about you. But that's got to be true.
And it was true. And it was interesting that Robert and you both immediately just gave me space and you offered yeah. to help and it didn't. But that whole thing about explanation and defending and trying to bring reason and logic, like I actually did that today in the podcast. I said, man, I had done this, and then this happened and this happened. And then we start talking about all the stuff that happens, but all that doesn't even really matter. What matters is, you know what? I'm feeling this way. I know I'm not my best version of myself. Thank you for just loving me here and let's just move towards mm-hmm. our day. And it was just a matter of an hour or two and I was completely myself again. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't immediate.
Go ahead. Oh, Bob, about ready to say something. Well, I don't want to.
Yeah, but me knowing that I haven't done something wrong or simply offering, hey, is there something that I need to do? And then when they say, no, there's nothing that you need to do, you really do need to believe them.
Yes.
You know, rather than constantly trying to coddle or trying to... No, you just believe them and go about your day.
And you know, people need to get comfortable saying this is not about you. And they need to get comfortable saying whether they do or don't want input.
Correct.
Yes.
And in what areas they want input. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you want somebody to come and coddle you, don't walk around giving the silent treatment and sulking and sending silent signals of how pathetic you are.
Yeah, and they should be guessing that you obviously need help.
Remove all guessing.
Remove the guessing. If there's any advice we give to relationships, remove the guessing. Like, just put stuff on the table.
Of course, when people get... I say the way the marriage starts is this. Anything you didn't agree upon before you got married, you have no right to expect after you get married. In other words, you can't come in after the fact and say, oh, by the way, I always expected you're going to polish my shoes every Friday.
Yeah.
You know, if I was to do something like that to Brenda, she'd be like, I'll polish your shoes. You know, we have no right to expect of anybody what they haven't committed. But that doesn't just start at the beginning of the relationship and the marriage. That even gets down to how you argue, how you deal with conflict. Mm-hmm. At the beginning of conflict, you need to say what you need to say. Now, if you can't do it without blowing up, then just say, I'm going to need about an hour.
Yeah.
And we'll talk in about an hour. You can't do this thing where it's like, oh, we'll talk in 4 weeks from now if I feel like it, you know. But at some point, you have to say, this is what I want to talk about. This is the kind of help I want, you know. And then you reach an agreement there about, okay, then this is going to be your role in this. This is going to be my role in that. And
Let's take an hour. I love that because so many people just force the issue while the emotions are high. And it just ends up in a yelling match. And the thing is, at the beginning, you can say, I'm just going to leave for a while. That's not good enough. But if you say, let's meet back here in 1 hour, then all of a sudden there's safety for that other person. Yeah. Okay, you're not just hiding into your room for the next 3 days. You're coming back in an hour. Okay, I can agree to that, you know?
Yeah, or you might say, and you might even come back at the end of the hour and say, you know something? I'm not ready. Right. I mean, you know, there's a lot of ways you can go.
Of course, like continual moving with the ebb and flow of the moment.
All relationships... all friendships only thrive in an environment of communication and permissions.
Mm,
I'll communicate with you, and you know, and we give each other permission about what we're, how we're going to let you step into my life here, or how, what input I'm wanting to receive from you. You know, it's hard for me. I'm sure it's hard for you guys. Of course, you know, you guys raising kids and all that kind of stuff, just like I, you know, have been. And, you know, man, we got, you know, we could dig out 10,000 testimonies of marriages that got saved and the lives that got turned around because people sat and had a conversation with us. And so, you know, you have a passion to take that to your children and to your spouses that you love because you don't want to see them hurt. And they don't care. They don't care how many testimonies you got. They don't care how many people they help. They are in the throes of a situation that's about them, and now that you're involved, it's about you. And so we get frustrated because we know we can help them, but you know what? We don't, if they don't give us permission, we can't just push our way in.
That is a perfect example, because when we force our way, and it's challenging because you love your kids so much and you do have what they need and you want to give them this present, and yet they're not asking for that present or ready or willing for that. And so you know that you just love them in this moment and you don't have an agenda for them. But then when they start asking, that's when you know you can, you know, mm-hmm. It's so important to have the permission. And you know what? I had not thought of that word, Jim, that permission. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we teach so much about communication, but now we're going to, you know, start talking about, like, that's a whole new place to explore, yep. Is permission.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, here's the thing. We think that everything about solving life's problems is complicated, hard, and painful.
Right.
And that's really the real reason we don't communicate. That's yeah. really the real
that's
reason
right.
we don't just look at our spouse and say, you know, give me about an hour, we'll talk then. Because we don't even know we ever intend to talk to them about it. We don't know if we ever intend to solve whatever this problem is, even though it might come up week after week, month after month, year after year, until it totally destroys our love and our you know, I like to use the word love there, our tenderness, our loving
yeah,
tenderness.
I always like the kindness and even being yeah. nice to each other. Like, let's just play nice yeah. with each other.
You yeah. know, at some point, if somebody just never tells you and gives you permission and, you know, and talks to you and lets you know what's going on with them, at some point you reach a place to where the only way I can keep from just hating your guts is to harden my heart and not be interested in what's hurting you.
Yeah.
And that's where, that, you know, remember, when I came, you know, one of the many places where the discussions on divorce are totally twisted by religion, you know, was when Jesus, when they, by the way, what's interesting, and the King James usually gets this right, when the King James says to put your wife away, that's not divorce in the original language. Now, most translators and most modern preachers will always interpret that as divorce. Putting your wife away is what, you know, what we talked about before, about the hateful divorce, where the whole deal is, I'm not going to divorce you, but I'm going to push you out of my life so that you are desperate. And so the idea there is that they will have an affair or they'll do something so wicked that you are excused by the church community. You are, and in your heart, you're excused before God. Look, they actually committed adultery. Well, you pushed them out there. You isolated. You made them lonely. So really, when people won't communicate, they're setting up a situation for what the Bible calls the hateful divorce. And so when the two times Jesus was asked about this stuff, his questions, if we actually translated the terminology properly, would be very different than religion and modern churches ever taught us. But in one of those situations, Jesus said, look, I love this. I've thought about preaching a whole series called God is Not an Idealist. Because this is one of these places where, you know, Jesus said, look, from the beginning, God never wanted divorce.
Right.
But he gave you divorce because of your hardness of heart.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really interesting. Jesus says the reason people end up with a divorce and so many times, and one of the reasons they need a legal and spiritual way to end a relationship is because you get in that relationship and the way you treat your spouse they begin to harden their heart because that's the only survival mode that they've got. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you are the one that's hardened your heart, and that's why you shut them out. But eventually, hardness of heart always leads to an alienation and the withholding of affection and the willingness to let somebody suffer. Sometimes even the joy in watching somebody suffer because they've shut you out, and the only way you could survive is harden your heart. And I got news for you. The more you harden your heart, the meaner you get.
Mm-hmm. And that withholding of affection, you know, as the severing of the relationship takes place with that hardness of heart, all of a sudden that there's a cruelty, you know, that happens. You know, so we're talking, you know, here at the beginning, you know, we just need to be kind, you know, towards one another, you know, just to be tenderhearted towards one another. But as you experience the disappointment, you know, as you alienate and close yourself off from the other person, you withhold communication. Yep. No longer do you have access, you know, to my life. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, it goes on. But then now, you're withholding with intention, and then it becomes cruel. And it has nothing to do with love or marriage.
And, you know, one of the things that happens, and I'll put this in the as we step into the material that we want to go into today.
Yeah.
And I'm going to put this into the context of marriage and divorce. Now, when you begin to harden your heart, there is really, I mean, you can compartmentalize that to some degree. But the real truth is, you're getting harder toward everybody. On some level, because you are developing your capacity to be cruel and unkind and not feel bad about it. And in the beginning, that's just about that person that you're in conflict with. But eventually, that can spread to your whole life, and you can be hard-hearted in every part of your life. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that happens because of you know, our social structure, but very specifically because of what the church has taught. So, you know, the church has taught, much of the church, you know, started with Catholicism. I mean, the stuff that Catholicism, and we've talked about this, you know, Catholicism teaches that marriage is, what is the word? I've forgotten the word. You know, like communion, they are, they're not ordinances. What do they call it?
Covenant?
No, not covenant. No. It's just a term just Catholics use.
Oh.
But anyhow, it's a sacrament.
Sacrament.
Is sacrament the word?
Yes, sacrament.
And so what happens...
sacraments. That's the word.
What happens is divorce or marriage is elevated to this place that says that it can keep you from going to heaven.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so stop and think about it. You get into... you know, into a bad situation, a violent person or whatever. And even the Bible would tell you to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Guard your heart.
Mm-hmm.
Stay in peace. You know, protect your children, all this kind of stuff. But you know, if you're a Catholic, for example, you know that if you go to get counseling from a priest, he's just going to say, you can't. Even if you're protecting your life, even if you're protecting your children, you can't do it. You have to. It is God's will that you stay in this. And because this is, I can't remember if it's the word sacrament. I don't think it is. But anyhow, however they elevate it, it's like if you leave your spouse, you're going to hell.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so you bump that forward. You don't always tell people, you know, evangelicals think they are so free and so smart and think they have come a lot, such a long way. The real truth is we believe about 90% of what Catholics believe. We just call it something different. And so even in evangelical settings, there is that concept of God never gives you permission to leave this situation and get safe. And so what happens is you're convinced that anybody you talk to in the spiritual world is going to tell you have no choice. But what's even worse is in your heart, you're going to believe that if you even open your heart to God, He's going to tell you, you have no options. So when we start hardening our heart, remember, what you will not obey, you can't hear it when God says it. And if your anticipation of what God is going to say, it doesn't matter if that's what, for example, if God were to speak to your heart today and you're in this horrible situation, God says, you know, I'm going to share with you how to resolve the situation. Well, if you're afraid then that God's going to say you have no choice except to go back and get beaten every week and, and you know, live in poverty and your kids have no clothes to wear and all kinds of, even if that's not what God's going to say, if that's your anticipation of what God's going to say, you're going to shut Him out. So the problem becomes that whether it's marriage in general or whether it's relationships in general, if we start hardening our heart against people as a survival mechanism, at some point we harden our hearts against God.
Wow. It goes that far.
So if we harden our hearts against God and believe that anything He wants us to do is going to be painful, it's going to be hard, it's going to be negative, it's going to be something that we don't want, it's going to be something we can't survive in, it's going to be something we know is not going to keep us, you know, at peace and walking with God, it's not going to help our children, So then what happens is we fall into that category of, I'm not willing to hear God because anything He's going to tell me to do is going to be hard.
Yeah.
So I'm only using relationship as an example.
Right.
But you can flip that over into moving from poverty to prosperity.
Yeah. How would it work in that?
You can flip that over to
sickness to healing.
Sickness to healing. You can flip that over to getting new career skills. I mean, you can flip this over into every area of life where you're looking at a situation and you're saying, where I am now, I really don't have what it takes to deal with this. Just thinking about dealing with this pain. Well, if thinking about dealing with something that's pain, then you're not thinking about it right. You're not thinking about it from God's perspective. But the point is, you are not willing to hear what God says. So here is the big punchline.
Yeah.
The big punchline is any area of your life right now and forever going forward that you're not willing to walk with God through transformation, it's not really because it's hard. It's because you don't want to. That's it. That's the only reason you can't do it. That's pretty scary. You know, when Jesus was teaching in Matthew 13 about the parable of the seed. And see, the key here is this. Trying to have transformation without listening to God, and letting the Word of God get into your heart, and then pondering it, thinking about it, letting God show you what it could look like in real life and how it could work like in real life. That's how transformation comes. There is no other way. There's not another biblical process for transformation. So trying to shut God out or trying to solve a problem or go through transformation without 100% dependence and trust for God is sort of like saying, I'm going to plant a garden without seeds, without sunlight, without rain, and I'm never going to work it. I'm going to let weeds grow up in it. And I'm going to expect, in the absence of all the factors that make this seed grow, I'm going to expect this to work out. And if it's hard, I'm going to quit and call God a liar.
Like the definition of an insanity, like what you just described was literally insanity.
Yeah. So, and that's why Jesus said in Matthew 13, I tell you, we misinterpret Matthew 13 when he's talking about the parable of the sower and seed. Actually, in verse 11, he says, look, the reason I preach in parables is because it has been given to you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of God. But to them, talking about people on the outside, people who don't want it, people who reject it, people who, if you trace it all the way back to everything Jesus ever taught about the kingdom of heaven, you trace it back to the fact that they don't want to be repentant. They don't want to be taught. They don't want it. And he says, And so it goes down. And so you get this idea that God closed these people's eyes, that God made this selection. But actually, it goes on and says, and then the prophecy of Isaiah is fulfilled, which says, in hearing, you will hear and not understand, and seeing, you will see and not perceive. And then he says, for the hearts of this people have grown dull. Their ears are hard of hearing. Their eyes, now listen to this, their eyes they have closed. Otherwise, they would see. Their eyes would be open. Their ears would be open. They would understand with their hearts. And in the Greek, it says, and then they'd have to change. So what he's saying is, we shut our eyes, we close our ears, we cover our heart when we are confronted with something that says it's time to change. And we shut God out, and we come up with all these goofy excuses for why we can't change, for how hard it is, for how difficult it is, and the real truth is, all it really is we don't want to change. And in the Greek, doesn't say this in the King James, but in the Greek, it is just the word change. It's not repent. It's not all that stuff. It's just, I am not willing to change.
You know what? This is so interesting. Often when we are helping a person, it doesn't even have to be a couple, just an individual, and we want to find this place in someone's life, we ask them just the question, what do you want more of? And they'll say, what do you want more of in your relationships? Well, I want this. Then we have them, after they've written that down, what do you want more of in your personal life, in your career, your ministry, whatever. Now, right, I don't have this because I, and then they have to fill in the blank. So now they're faced with, well, I want more kindness between me and my wife. I don't have this because I, well, now you got a good question. Now you're asking the right question. Because you're not making it about them or anything else. I want more money. I don't have this because I'm not willing to what? Like, it's just a good revealer to say, I don't have this because there is an area, if we're not experiencing some complete peace and joy and righteousness and victory and favor in an area of our life, instead of shutting our ears and our eyes and covering our hearts, like you said, when we're then we are confronted with, then something's got to change in me. There's always something that I can change within me.
Mm-hmm. And the changing that you got to change within you is not the transformation. We're not talking about you coming up with the effort and the power and the determination to solve the real problem. It's the opening your eyes. Because remember, the one law of transformation, put off the old man. You got to make a choice and say, I don't want this anymore. I won't have this anymore. I'll quit making excuses for this. Then you have to renew your mind as to what your options are in God.
Yeah.
And then you have to choose those. So it's all about choosing.
Choosing. Yes.
And when you choose those, then you're able, choosing the new man, choosing to be kind, choosing to be patient, is pretty much as close to putting on something new as you can get, because you're choosing with the intention. I choose this, you know. When Ultimate Impact. By the way, we're getting ready to start the new Ultimate Impact. It'll be a few weeks, but this is going to be pretty phenomenal. It's going to be all about living in heaven on earth, and it's going to go into the keys of the kingdom and ultimately the law of the sea. This is going to be a pretty jam-packed.
That's going to be a good one,
So we'll be sending out some information about that. You guys can promote it and let people know about it.
For sure we will do that, yes.
But this particular workshop that we're on now, which has been about 20 weeks, I think, it's called Take Control of Your Life. Mm-hmm. And what I've told people, the very first day of when we began, we call them life transformation workshops. And so what I told them on the first day, I said, if you make this journey with me, I said, this is going to be a long workshop, and you're going to face more issues in this than anything you've ever heard me teach. And that's pretty challenging.
Yeah.
And I said, but at the end of this, if you will do the exercises and make this journey with me, at the end of this, when you face challenges, almost any challenge that you're facing, whatever the obstacle is that's keeping you from making that decision and having the confidence, you will be able to overcome that obstacle in about 20 to 30 seconds.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And it really is that simple. You know, I'm writing for years, decades, people have been trying to get me to write an autobiography, which I'm really not interested in, if you really want to know the truth. But I kind of felt like the Lord was dealing with me about this, about writing an autobiography from early childhood to when I got saved. Mm. And not making it about me. And, you know, the point is not really me, what I went through. The point is, how did all this turn into life lessons? Mm-hmm. Now, I have what I call the lonely visitor. And when I was a child, I mean, I'm talking about early as a child. When I was a child, I would begin to have this, I can't even explain it. It was such a deep loneliness, mm-hmm. and pain and sorrow, and I didn't know where it was coming from. I didn't know what was causing it. That as a early, I mean, I started running away from home early. I mean, I can, before I was even in school, I'd run away. And, you know, when I was young, you know, when I was 5 years old and 10 years old, I wouldn't stay gone very long because, you know, when you're afraid of the dark, you can't run very far. And so, but, you know, by the time I'm up like 12 years old, I'm hopping trains, man, you know, and I would be laying in bed in the middle. I mean, I'm telling you, I would feel this longing and this loneliness and this sadness and this sorrow that, I mean, it was palpable. I mean, I would be almost in tears just laying in my bed, not knowing why I'm so sad.
Right.
And usually I'll just get up and climb out the window and I'd go prowl the streets at night just trying to find, you know, just trying to find something. There's going to be something out here that's calling me. There's something out here that I got to find in order to overcome this. And so, you know, this goes on my whole life. So my book opens in New Year's Eve, 1965 or 1966. I was either 14 or 15 years old. I am hitchhiking on a state highway, New Year's Eve. Didn't even have a decent coat on. The only clothes I had was in a paper grocery bag. And man, the temperature's dropping. I'm out in the middle of nowhere. The sun is going down. Now there's a rain that's really like a fog almost. You know what I mean? You know those kinds of rains.
It's like
where
that
it's actually,
chill.
Yeah, it's raining, but it's not drops.
Right.
It's just
intense,
in the air. You know?
Intense air, yeah.
And so, you know, it's freezing cold out here. And I'd already walked about 10 miles. And I was headed, where I was going was 86 miles from where I lived. And I'd already made up my mind, you know, on New Year's Eve, sun's gone down, I'm not going to get a ride. Nobody's going to pick me up.
No.
And so, you know, I'm thinking, okay, I'll walk that whole 86 miles to get to where I'm going. And so I'm out, like I said, I'm out in the boonies. But the whole idea of being out in the winter, nearly freezing to death, the whole idea of how dangerous it was.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this was back when people first started picking up hitchhikers and killing them and stuff, you know, because I used to hitchhike all the time when I was even younger than this. When I was like 13, 14 years old, I would hitchhike from state to state and all that crap. And so all of those threats, even though I was aware of them, they were not as bearing on my soul as what I call this lonely visitors. Like, it's like somebody shows up and just takes over your emotions.
Wow.
And so, I mean, I
writing,
would go through
I bet
that.
While you're writing this, it just must bring it all, that feeling as you're describing
it. Oh,
it does. You can remember that. And it's intense. And I can tell it's even almost too much for words. You're using some understanding that we can have to walk into that, but we really don't even know the intensity of what, you know, you call it the early visitor, but that depth of that loneliness.
You know, I would, when this would happen, I mean, I'm talking about at 14 years old, I just disappear.
Huh.
Nobody knew where I was. Parents didn't know where I was. Nobody. And, you know, I would go somewhere. I'd find some way to survive. And so, like, at 14, I disappeared for, like, about 6 months.
Wow.
And then my parents, you know, my mom knew where I was by then and made me come home. So I came home and promised I'd stay home, wouldn't run away again. And I'm telling you, within just about six weeks, I was out the window. And I always climb out the window at night. And so I was out the window. This time I was gone for about a year. And so they brought me back home. And so, man, they're threatening to put me in reform school. And I'm like, look, I promise. I will never, ever do this again. Yeah. But I'm telling you what, when this lonely visitor would show up, it really wouldn't matter. Nothing mattered. It probably was as close to feeling like a junkie needing a fix as you could get without actually using, you know,
what did this early visitor tell you?
There was no telling. There was just feeling. There was just feeling lonely, feeling alone, feeling separate, feeling like they would. Never, ever, ever find connection.
Right.
I'd never,
right.
ever, ever find safety and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, it got to where as I got older, man, I'd have a good job. I'd be making money. And these feelings would start coming. And I would just quit my job and disappear. I wouldn't tell anybody. I wouldn't tell anybody I was leaving. I wouldn't tell anybody I was feeling depressed. I wouldn't tell anybody anything. People that knew me or people I was sharing an apartment with or something, they just come home one day, I'm gone. And they they'd never hear from me again unless they accidentally found me. You know, I remember one time I was playing in a club. You know, I was a professional musician. I was playing in a club one time. And in walks this young woman that, like, I probably 3 years before, she probably hadn't seen me in 3 years. And we were living together. I just disappeared. She had no idea where I was. Nobody had an idea. So, man, I'm telling all that to say how deep and pervasive the dysfunction was.
Yes.
And I'd blow up any relationship. So when this would happen to me, I can remember times when I would fall into this funk and I would be like this for 6 months. I mean, I would be inconsolable for 6 months. I'd get drunk and start doing drugs, and I'd go on a binge that would last for months because I just could not live with all of this pain. Mm. And so, you know, when I got saved, that was still there. You know, they don't teach you how to deal with this stuff when you become a believer. They don't teach you anything. Because, I mean, the good people love God and help you as much as they can, but they never really believe most of what the Bible taught about this kind of stuff. So, man, when I first got saved for the first about 8 years, this would still happen to me. The only difference was I didn't just disappear. I mean, you know, I controlled it to some degree. I'd pray, da, 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 da. But I tell you, I can tell you when it got to where these deep, miserable, painful feelings, when they would take control of my life and spin my life out of control for months at a time, I can remember when I could walk into a room and sit down, and 10 or 15 minutes later, I could walk out and it'd be over. And that's transformation.
Wow.
That's not me learning a new set of skills. That's not me trying really, really hard enough. That's not me begging God for weeks and days on end.
Right.
That is me walking into a room alone, knowing who God is, connecting with God, and putting off the old man and putting on the new man. And so I learned back in the late 70s, early 80s, that we should be able to solve the core problems. We should be able to break whatever chains of bondage or holiness. We should have the key to unlock any prison door that we're in, and we should be able to do it about 20 seconds. So having dealt with that depth of pain, and again, I can remember, I was 16 years old. I can remember I started drinking. I remember one year I started drinking at Christmas, drinking and drugging at Christmas. I stayed drunk pretty much until about May. And in May, when I sobered up, I just disappeared. I left all my clothes. I left all my belongings. I left everything that I had. I got my guitar and just enough clothes to survive. And bam, I was gone. And nobody knew. I never told anybody where I was going. But to move from that place of sabotaging everything in your life to being able to solve that problem in 20 or 30 seconds.
Yeah.
That tells me that this is so easy that anybody can do this. Anybody can have this. Anybody can step into, transform into anything the Bible says you can be in a matter of seconds. And once you are being who you want to be, then you can ultimately do anything you want to do effortlessly and make it all about God.
Whew, that was really good. And as you were talking, I was just really feeling the depth of the description of your pain. I had not heard that about that from you. I guess it's coming out because you're writing this book and, you know, thinking about your autobiography. But I was thinking of people that I know in my life that have been deep-seated in alcoholism their whole life, and they just can't get out. And I was thinking about this one particular person, and I just could weep because I thought, he's still in this. And hearing from you just gives me some hope for him and for those ones who are listening that transformation is possible. Yeah. How does that person get to a place of willingness?
Choice.
Okay.
You know, the alcoholic is not craving alcohol. They're craving the presence of God. They have just developed an addiction by substituting that craving with alcohol.
Right.
You know, the drug addict, the sex addict,
right.
You know, the person who gets into violence, you know, all of these are, you know, including how I have been, including all of us even today that are pretty normal, living pretty victorious.
Yeah.
You know, when something starts drawing us out of here, by the way, one of the things I'm going to do in this book, I'm going to take all of the worst, and I'm probably going to share things I'm going to share things never shared ever.
Right.
And I didn't close these things off because I was ashamed. I didn't. One of the main reasons, there's a lot of stuff I never shared. I never wanted a person to get the idea that there was anything unique about me and my walk with God, because if you think somebody else has something that's unique, then you think it's not available to everybody. And so I just didn't want to influence people in a way that thought, oh well, okay, yeah, you've been through that, and so that's different for you, and da 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 da. But one of the things I'm going to show, every one of these deep dysfunctions, and man, I'm telling you, I was dysfunctional. Mm-hmm. You know, I would have been about 10 or 11 years old. And this big old kid next door to us was beating up my brother, my older brother. And man, cool as a cucumber. He had my brother down. He was holding him down. He was sitting on top of him. I walked out there, popped a switchblade out, stuck that knife in his back, and slit his back. And he jumped up and said, "You give me that knife." And he stuck his hand out, you know, like that. I just stabbed him in the hand. It's like, you ain't going to touch my brother, you know. I mean, we were crazy. Me, my brother, my sister, we were crazy. This is the world we grew up in. I know there's a whole lot of people been through a whole lot worse, but I'm just saying we were crazy.
Right.
But the thing I want people to understand is everything that draws you into dysfunction, that deep longing is really the longing to know and connect with God through the Lord Jesus.
Yeah.
And you know, people say, "Well, I got this horrible drug problem." Well, no, what you got is a substitution problem. Every time God starts calling you, you substitute it with something else. And the reason you do is because you think it's going to be hard to go from where you are in life now. You know, how many times have you been ministering to somebody as an alcoholic or something? Like, I can't do it. I mean, I can't do it. I can't give up drinking. I can't give up drugs. I can't give up sex. I can't get, you know, why? Because this is going to be too hard. Mm-hmm. No, it's not.
Yeah. I've
so good.
You know, really wanted to bring encouragement, you know, to people that are willing to take the journey, you know, to really experience transformation. One of the things is I really want them to begin to recognize possibly you've allowed this to be a part of your life for so very, very long. You know, it might be years, decades, it might, you know, as long as you can remember. But when you begin to take the choice back and you begin to make a decision, you see, you can turn the corner and experience transformation quicker than what you would even begin to allow yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Because you feel that it's been for so long that my journey back is going to be a long, difficult, hard road. But what we do is that we allow our life experiences to falsely validate the concept that we think or that we hold is actually true.
Yeah.
And so over that time, all we've done is we've allowed the poor choices that we've made to completely validate that what I believe either about myself, about others, or about God is actually true.
Well, we forget that there are two choices that you can make and you get a new heart. This means that, and even for believers who are either born again, not every believer that's born again has accepted the reality that they got a new heart because they refuse to believe what Jesus did fully in their lives. They're still, they're more connected to their past than they are in their life with Jesus. And so we get this idea, even as believers, we get this idea that with every challenge that we have got to go through this process. We got to get specific counseling for this specific problem, and we got to go through this. And so every challenge that we face is going to be monumentally hard because every challenge is going to be like starting from scratch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And trying to find my way through it.
Yeah, exactly.
But you see, when you accept that you have a new heart and what that actually means, then this is the difference between change and transformation.
Yeah.
Because when you know you got a new heart, you're never thinking about, I got to change, I got to change, I got to change. I mean, well, sadly, that's what most Christians really are thinking. Mm-hmm. But see, the difference between change and transformation, change is rejecting who you are and putting forth the effort to try to become somebody else. Change is taking this thing that has become your normal and trying to say, man, I've got to find some way to be able to have a different normal. I got to change. I mean, it's all hard. It's all, psychiatrists have got us. I've had people come to me for counseling that had been in psychotherapy sometimes for 10 or 15 years, spend hundreds of thousands of dollars, never gotten any better. And honestly, I'd have people come about 3 sessions.
Yeah.
Bam.
Right.
And it's because I'm not telling you that you got to spend the rest of your life trying to fix anything.
Definitely not. Right.
I am telling you that by two choices, you can become a new person, get a new heart. So now it's not a matter of trying to fix and all that kind of stuff. It's just a matter of choosing. And the moment you choose what you have in Jesus, then the life and the power of God comes forth to make it a reality.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's as easy as it gets.
Yeah. I love that. And it was just so simple. Last week I had someone in my office, and then within a very, like, it was like you're going down the path and then this revert, wait a minute, she said, I have a real trauma here that I've never been able to get over. So instead of continuing down that normal path, I said, wait, let's just do that. And she goes, what do you mean? I said, there's a trauma there that Jesus just wants to hold you and carry you through. And she thought, well, that'll take another week of counseling. I said, no. Just close your eyes right now. 5 minutes later, she's a whole new, I'm like, yeah. And I said, guess what? You just had trauma counseling. Well, what do you mean? I said, that's all it, we way overcomplicate this.
Oh, yeah.
Like, now when you watch that movie in your head, now it looks like that. That's trauma now gone. Now you are safe. And I'm not minimizing people's trauma by saying that, but I am saying it's that freeing when we make the choice that this doesn't have to change how I am. This is who, change what I do. This is who I am. Anyway, it was just an interesting to see that.
Well, you and I were talking about that, and I was telling you a similar story. where I got this great letter from somebody. Right. And man, they were just talking about how that since they'd been a part of Ultimate Impact, how that, man, I mean, the stuff that they had overcome, it was just amazing. And, you know, her and her husband had been separated, and it looks like they're getting reconciled. Right. I mean, it was just a couple of pages mm-hmm. of great stuff that had happened. And she said, now, you know, I'm meditating every day. She said, but I still have this one problem. I don't know what to do about it. And you know, I told you, I said, like, do the same thing about that you did about all this other stuff.
That's exactly it.
And guess put what? Off, put
yes,
on.
Yes. Oh. And I do too. Like, and we were talking such about this deep sadness that you were talking about and this pain. But you know what? There are certain habitual things that I can go back to. You know, yep. And then I have to go back to that belief, but I have to do it this week. It's not that we arrive at, but then when it starts to creep in, we can immediately recognize and go, wait a minute, I have a lie. You know, one of my lies is I have to work hard to make money. And that's just a lie that has been, you know, had a lot of power in the past. Yeah. But then I have to just think for a minute, wait a minute, my schedule is getting way too full. I think I've probably gotten back to that lie and say, no, I am a heart at rest and I get to have, days off are good for me and I can trust God. I can rest in him. I don't have to work every single day. You know, I'm talking, you know, and so I'm just trying to say to us listeners that this always applies. There's always new levels of the Garden of Eden and paradise and rest and living at that, laboring to the place of rest that we all get to go to. And we do get closer and closer.
Well, remember, religion has made everything about suffering. You've got to suffer to be purified.
Right.
Well, no, Jesus suffered so we could be purified. You know, you've got to suffer to solve this problem. No, Jesus suffered so I could just choose to walk out of this problem. Mm-hmm. And so religion took everything that Jesus did and said, this is what you got to do because Jesus did it. No, Jesus did it so I don't have to do it. And so in this suffering concept, religion and most of what people have heard all their lives from radio preachers, television preachers, you know, denominational churches, all has been God is going to make this hard.
Right.
And through you doing something that's hard and through you doing this suffering, it's really going to get the sin out. It's really going to solve
our problem. Really no, it's not. Really, 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 really suffer.
So, you know, what, and you know, in this book, I don't know if I finished this statement I was going to make, but my intention is I'm going to go through, like I said, every single horrible dysfunction that I think I should talk about. And I'm just going to show how all that really was, that whatever that longing was, whatever that dysfunction was I was given to, I was giving myself to that as a substitute for giving myself to God.
Ah.
So you're making the choice anyhow. You're making a harder choice. You're making a harder choice to get drunk, lose your job, get cirrhosis of the liver, all that kind of. You're making a much harder choice by trying to fulfill all of these longings and all these dysfunction and answering all these. All of that, we're making it so incredibly hard. It'd just be as simple as saying, you know what? I believe rather than me trying to fix that, I'm just going to accept the fact that Jesus took care of this. The choice I'm going to make is Jesus. I'm choosing to have the life that you paid for by your sacrifice.
Yes. Yeah.
It's incredible. Yeah. Profound. All of those things. All of the things.
Mm-hmm. Another thing you'll begin to realize is that the very thing that you felt so fearful of, you know, again, the things that are in the dark, the things that you have just given so much power to, well, all of a sudden, when brought into the light, it's just like, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that it would be, quote, that easy.
Yeah.
And there are so many, and that's, you know, really, you know, the power of fear is that it just wants to hold its place in darkness.
Yep.
And it limits, you know, the realities of the extravagance of God's love and all that he has for me. And wow.
You know, there's a song that people who aren't musicians would never understand. A song George Harrison of the Beatles wrote, I don't remember what year he wrote this, but called While My Guitar Gently Weeps. You ever heard that song?
No.
Look it up. It's really interesting. People who are not musicians don't get it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the whole song is about, you know, I look at you there and see the life that something, 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 while my guitar gently weeps. I look at the floor. I know it needs sweeping. You know, I look at this. I know this needs to be done. But my guitar gently weeps. Mm-hmm. Now, when you're a musician, particularly if you're a blues player, when you're a musician, and all musicians do it, blues players are just more known for it. What you do is you express all of your longings mm-hmm. through your music. Mm-hmm. So, you know, your guitar weeping is sort of like, come play me and fix me and mm-hmm. express your pain. Express. I mean, you know, there's a whole mm-hmm. lot of dimensions to you know, what that concept means. Well, you know, my lonely visitor, what he brought to me was not being lonely in this moment. Interesting paradox with me was I've always been a person who enjoyed being alone. Mm-hmm. There's a difference between being alone and being lonely. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't the fact that I'm so lonely now. It was always the fact, and what I, you know, figured out, well, I didn't figure it out, really God kind of led me into this, but what I came to realize, it was always the threat that no matter what kind of love I found, I would lose it, and the loneliness that I would spend my life suffering through would be finding love and losing it. I didn't mind being alone. It didn't bother me walking down that highway middle of the night alone. No. You know, it didn't bother me when, you know, when I was 15 years old living in a flop house for $15 a week. That was my rent where I lived. So, you know, that was a wonderful place. I'm 15 years old paying $15 a week for it. That didn't bother me. It didn't bother me to go to bed by myself at night. You know, it didn't bother me to be alone. I could always go pick up my guitar and express every feeling that I had, you know, through my playing. But what happened time and time and time again was that when I would find happiness, my fear of the kind of loneliness that would come if I lost it would say it would be easier just to destroy this happiness.
Yes. Yeah.
Than it will be to live in this and lose it.
Yeah. Mm.
And so I would destroy everything.
Sabotage every time.
Yeah. That would bring love or happiness or relationships in my life. So, you know, a lot of what we go through is like, it's not, I'm not sad because I'm broke now. I'm sad because I think I'm never going to be prosperous. Are you know what I mean? This can get stretched out in a lot of different ways, but sometimes it's just a fear. Yeah. That, like Bob said, you know, it's not even real. It's a lie. It's a delusion. But it's driving you someplace,
right,
to use something as a substitute for what Jesus can do. And my intention is to show in every one of these dysfunctions of mine that I'm going to talk about how that if I had known the truth about God, mm-hmm. I could have mm-hmm. in a moment turn my heart to God, and in an instant, this would be over. You know, when I was about 5 years old, we went to church for probably a few weeks. Only time in my life, childhood life, growing up there, went to church. Now, remember, you know, you guys probably heard me talk about this. When I was about 4 years old, I knew I was called. I didn't know what that meant. I mean, I can remember being in the backyard, and I don't know if I'd seen a preacher on television. I have no idea. But I remember I took a cardboard box, stood it up on end, stood behind it like a pulpit, looked into heaven. I said, all right, God, I'll do whatever you want me to do.
I love it.
And so, I mean, I've always had that consciousness, you know, this calling of God. Well, when I was about 5 years old, we went to church for a few weeks. I walked up to the pastor. I got him by the tail of his coat, his suit coat, while he was talking. And I was relentless. I would not let go. And so finally he was like, what do you want? And I said, I want to know God. And he said, you're too young. And, you know, there was a day there mm-hmm. where a man of God had a chance mm-hmm. to introduce me to Jesus
Right.
And didn't.
Wow.
And for and so from that point in time, you know, for another 20 years, I lived in hell when there was one simple answer that was within my reach.
Right.
But I just didn't know what that answer was. Well, we all for quiet here.
Yeah, yeah, we are. Yeah, I think we're all just in our own way.
Mm-hmm.
For you and I, you know, as listeners here today, so profound. And Jim, thank you for being so vulnerable mm-hmm. and open and sharing, you know, with such transparency your own heart and life. But this is where it comes to, and I don't want you to let go of that coattail until you realize,
mm-hmm.
God, it's really you that I want to know.
Mm-hmm.
And just allow yourself, you know, give yourself permission. That's kind of where we began today, is that, you know, within relationship, you know, there's a communication, but then that permission is, you know, how will I allow you access into my life? And today's a day where you really give the Lord permission and say, Lord, I'm giving you access to the dark places of my life.
Beautiful.
And I don't need to be afraid of you.
Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah.
The longing that you have for his presence is so good. Well, thank you so much, Jim. Thanks, listeners. Yeah.
Thank you,
just
guys.
Just rest in that presence of God and your heart longs for him and your heart finds him.
Yeah. And just, you know, as we turn off the podcast today, be thankful because it will begin to create feelings of abundance.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And it'll begin to move away that sense of lack. Yep. He really is more than enough.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.